Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2018. Lecture 26, delivered on November 29, 2018. The title of this lecture is Calculating Free Cash Flow.
Today, Calculating Free Cash Flow. This is a little more in-depth on free cash flow. Now, as I said, you won't have to, do the Chapter 12 homework for a score. However, it will be on the cumulative for Chapters 9 through 12, some questions from it. So it's worth your while to do the homework anyway to make sure that you have the skill sets down. And I'm going to bring up some of the points about free cash flow in the lecture today. But first, we always wanted to look at the markets. And the markets had a huge surge upward yesterday. Just a heavy-duty jump. And I'll show you that very quickly here. That was the futures. Oops. Let me do a spider here. Back up here. I'll just call up the spider from yesterday. And we're just sitting here waiting. Well, that's something that's really funny about the internet today. Let me look at this, show you a spider. And you can have a look at the spider from yesterday. I'll do a 5-day. Now, this is yesterday. You see that big honking up shot yesterday on the S&P 500 ETF? That happened primarily because the Federal Reserve sent out a message that it was not going to be brutally harsh with raising interest rates from here on out. It still signaled that it's going to raise them, but the announcement was that it would not do it in a strong fashion, and it would be limited in in the number of these future increases in the interest rates. And the markets reacted to that simply because prior to that, they had thought the Fed was going to really tighten the screws on interest rates hard and fast. And by this new information that came at about noon, suddenly the market just went pop. And all through the rest of the day, it did really well, simply because it was correcting the information that it had before. It works off the current information. Before yesterday, the current information was that the Fed was going to beat up interest rates, smack them up in the air. And then once new information came in, very quickly, the market impounded that new information. That's the efficient market. It doesn't wait around. It will just react to whatever the most recent information is. Now, going back, however, for today, you'll see that the futures markets are setting up for a negative day. S&P 500 and the Dow, the S&P 500 looks to be about down 0.25% on the opening, going into the opening bell. The Dow is down slightly. The NASDAQ is down a little harder. Now, based upon what you know so far in this class, is there a way that you could characterize why the market is fell in the overnight? Why the sentiment turned negative in the overnight market? Is there any good explanation for that? Or can you give some talking points, if you're a talking head on Financial News Network? Why did we have that big up pop, and then the rest of the day it went up, and then in the overnight, in the futures market, there's been a sell-off? What was that about? Go ahead.
It seems like we're just kind of in a bear market, and that news was more like
In other words, that was a shot of caffeine on a day when you didn't get any sleep the night before. Something like that. That is a possibility. That's actually a very good one. Generally speaking, okay, let me say this. Now, this is only for the purposes of instruction. I'm going to lift all of your percentages by 20% on your final course grade. Everyone, yay! Yeah. Go. Okay, now that I've done that, now I can go around and find the people who don't deserve it and knock them down. Ruh-roh. Sometimes you'll see a market in an upsurge. All boats will be lifted in the upsurge. And then, once the euphoria passes, and it will pass very quickly, they'll go back and say, ah, that one right there, nah, that should not have gone up because that... And this is especially true when you see portfolios. Sometimes in the trading that happens, a portfolio will simply go up. And then the analysts will go in or the computers will go in and find individual stocks in the portfolio that should be shaved back because they really didn't deserve to go up like the whole portfolio did. That is generally, the term for that is called a short-term correction. It's simply a short-term correction. It's the same thing that happens on the downside. When a market surges downward, oftentimes the next day you'll see bargain hunters buying up lots of stocks that shouldn't have been knocked to hell in the down surge. So you'll see this kind of morning after effect. After the euphoria of something great passes, you'll see the markets begin to say, well, that was nice, but now it's a new, and there's the other thing. It's also a new day, and new information came in overnight that clearly indicates that there are severe problems building in the market. We can have a good day when we're all happy, but the general trend, as you said, is that we are moving toward a bear market. You can see the bulls roam once in a while, but the bears are still going to come back. Now, in the overnight, there were a few pieces of information that were rather significant. News about the trade war with China is beginning to hit home a little stronger as tariffs begin to bite in and new products are beginning to show up. There was a news report early this morning that tariffs on Chinese goods are going to hit the prices of Christmas lights and bring them up about 10% over the next week or so. That would not be a good thing because Christmas lights are a big seller at Christmas time. Funny how that works. And so making an announcement like that is not good news. There's also, right now, there is a buildup to a rather, what could be a very bad war. We are not involved in it, but the markets are still getting a good look at something that might be a real problem in the next few months. The Sea of Azov was cut off, blockaded last night by the Russian Navy, meaning that there is going to be no transport through the Sea of Azov out of and into the Black Sea. That is an issue that might impact NATO if NATO decides that this is an aggression that cannot be turned away. And we might get involved in that little conflict. As you recall, the last couple of wars began, because of relatively small skirmishes in Europe and Eastern and Central Europe. So anyway, that's there too. So keep in mind there are some issues. Now here's another issue. The bond yield curve as of last night. You notice the 2-3 has spread back out to 3 basis points from 2. It was at, no, really? Wait. Oh, there it was at 2 days ago. On the 26th, it was 2 basis points. Then it spread to 3 on the 27th, and then on the 28th, it stayed at 3. The problem is this. that you have the 3-5 is at 3 basis points, which means that if you just did an arithmetic average for 3 to 4, 4 to 5, that would be a 1.5 basis point spread. That's the shortest basis spread so far. It is getting very close, and it looks like the 3-5 is going to be the problem. The 3-5 might be the one that does us in, because it is now narrowed to one about. Actually, if you do compounding, it's slightly less than 1.5 basis points. In other words, we're closing in on the yield curve inversion. That might explain why the Fed made that announcement yesterday, during the day yesterday, was to try to get the markets to boost up and be happy, saying, okay, we're not going to do as much as we said we were, or we're going to do it a lot more carefully, and so hoping the markets would not do what they just did, which is to narrow the 3-5 gap down to 1.5 basis points. In other words, we're really close to an inversion now, and that's the recession once that happens. Like I said, probably next week, or maybe the week after, but it looks like it might be next week, we'll have the inversion. And hence, you guys will be walking into a recession, getting internships, and the recession will last long enough that finding jobs will be something of a challenge. Anyway, that's your problem. I've got a job. I shouldn't be. Yes, I should. Okay. Free cash flow, I'll write the formula on the board again. And let me get this fool off here. The formula, and I've written this several times. Okay. Really? Free cash. Let me do it over here because it's a long free cash flow. Now, I'm going to do one today. It's going to be an attempt at one, and I'm going to let you tell me which one you want me to do, what company, so that it's all too often I can set up a script so I can show it like it's all easy. See, this step, because I'd already done it before I came into class. I like to do it while I'm in the class so you can see that, no, you're not the only one who can ask questions and wonder what to do next. Free cash flow, we'll have the revenue minus the costs, and if depreciation isn't already embedded in the costs in the income statement, then you would have to peel that out of the statement of cash flows to get it. And then you have to minus your interest expense times the marginal tax rate of the firm. That is essentially the net income, but we're going to talk about that in a minute. Now, the next thing is that you have to add back that stupid depreciation because it wasn't real. You didn't write a check to depreciation. However, that depreciation times the tax rate did create a real tax shield, protecting revenue from taxation. And then minus the capital expenditures, which you get from the statement of cash flows. And then minus the change in net working capital. That's, in a nutshell, what it is. Now, before I go on, I'm going to give a preliminary window into a problem with this. I said, well, all we have here on this first line, the quantity revenue minus cost minus depreciation minus interest expense, all times 1 minus the marginal tax rate, that you can get off the net, that's just net income on the accounting statement. However, that's not exactly true. We're going to do it that way today, but we're going to have to recognize that it is deeply flawed. There is a problem right in this first line. That means that the net income that you get from the accounting financial statements is inadequate. Let me get a snort of wild turkey or coffee here. Okay, now, where's the problem? This goes back to actually the first week of the course. So it's long past knowledge. Is there, I said, well, we're going to just take this revenue minus cost minus depreciation minus interest expense times 1 minus the marginal tax rate. That's nothing but the net income or earnings reported on the financial statement, income statement of the company. But that's really not true at all. It is absolutely not true. And this is where you have to get into deep fundamental, more fundamental analysis. Is there a problem? Do you see the problem?
No.
That's okay if you don't see it, because I talked a lot about it in the first couple of weeks of the semester. You remember back then when we were all young and happy and all of that? Yeah. Well, wouldn't those be in the account income statement? Wouldn't those be listed as costs? Of course they would, because you know they want to extract every possible tax deduction they can. But you're on the right track. Go. Oh, there. Ooh, you hurt me. That's actually much deeper than what I was planning for. Yeah, it is historic. Absolutely. It is historic. We would really need to be doing projected pro formas to do this honestly. Oh, absolutely. I mean, the historic, this is what, if you go to the net income, if you go to the accounting statements, you are looking at history. You're not looking at what is happening now. History is, we can use it as sort of a guide, but the future oftentimes looks nothing like history. Many companies were bright, beautiful, shining, wonderful companies. You look at the history of their financial statements, it's awesome. These are some of these companies are now either dead or they're dying. Hell, I could have looked at Sears' historical financial statements and I would have seen just a beautiful thing. I would have looked at a lot of companies and seen awesomeness that now has turned ugly. On the other hand, there are some companies that were just dead, flopping, half-baked, that suddenly surged. So history doesn't always tell us everything. For example, you, sir, I look at your, I use the history of you. I look at your yearbook photo in junior high school. Dear God. Oh, God, this poor son of a bitch. I see, you know, you had people, you know, write happy things in it, and in your book it says loser, you know, things. But look at now. I mean, you are a junior at Illinois State University. You look like you could be a double for Thor. In Ragnarok, yeah. I mean, okay, I'm going a little too far there. I was going to compare you to Gosling or someone like that, but no. But the point, though, is that what you look at in history is going to be sort of a guide, but at the same time, companies, people and companies do change. There's something else going on here, something. It's not quite as deep as that one. I'll give you a hint. The problem is this thing right here. Costs. That's the problem. What is it, madam, about costs that gets accounting people and finance people to say hurtful things about each other?
Looking at the profits from the house?
No. Something that goes back, way back in the history of this, of our discussions. Yeah.
Is it that accountants don't take into consideration opportunity?
Yahtzee. Opportunity costs. In other words, what we call the indirect costs. They are not there in the financial statements. They just aren't there. And those can dominate accompany. Costs that are hidden that come out of nowhere. Do you remember in your algebra or in high school or in college, do you remember the idea of complex numbers, imaginary numbers?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll show you something interesting here. I remember when I used to be a remedial math teacher, and I had this student just rant one day. Well, I live in the real world. Why are you teaching us about imaginary things? Well, you see, she was right to a certain extent. Electrical currents flow in complex space, the imaginary number I, which is the square root of negative 1. Oh, this doesn't really exist. It's not really there. It's imaginary. There is no such thing as the square root of negative 1. But we know that nature operates in this non-existent space. So you put two circuits together. One has 2 plus 20i. The other has 3 plus 50i. And you put them in a parallel line. 3 times 2 is 6. Plus 3 times 20 is 60i, plus 50i times 2 is 100i, plus 50i times 20i times 20i, and that comes out to be 1,000i squared. I squared is negative 1. So that is actually negative 1,000. So you have these two imaginary pieces that no one will ever see in the circuit. But then you have this. Massive voltage that comes out of nowhere. That's the problem with accounting statements. They don't see the hidden. They cannot. They're not allowed to see the hidden. And yet, just like in physics, just like in nature, just like in chemistry, those imaginary things, those things that don't have a name, come out and bite you in the butt when you grab two simple circuits. Oh, there's only a 6 circuit. There's only a 6 volts across this. And suddenly you are essentially, I mean, you grab this this parallel. You grab that and you would not need Metamucil for years. So this is the problem right here. The cost. The accounting numbers do recognize, well, the first one is what you said. They do recognize sunk costs. They do not recognize opportunity costs. And therein lies the problem. Therein lies the problem. Every cost that they are going to recognize on those financial statements is a sunk cost. It is a cost that has already happened. And once a cost has already been incurred, it should not have any effect upon our current and future decisions. You've already spent the money. It's too late. See, there's actually a lesson there. You're thinking about buying something online that you really love. Buy it quickly. And then you've already bought it, so it's too late. You can't worry about it anymore. You do understand that, right? So buy now, not later. Because once the decision and once the expenditure has been made, it has no bearing on future investment decisions. Except to the extent that it had probably knocked up knock down your bond rating if you borrowed the money to do it, or knock down your stock price if you financed it with equity. But there's the problem. It uses sunk costs, which have already been spent, and it ignores opportunity costs, the cost of the next best alternative that was not taken. Think about a company like Tesla. Every time it builds one of those Tesla cars, every time it does more R&D on that Tesla, what is actually, there is cost, oh yeah, we'll put that in our financial statements, but the problem is they do not look at what could have been done with that money instead. They could have plowed that money. Look at the opportunity cost is almost obvious. They could have put that into the side of the business that's doing the electric generators and probably made a hugely greater return on the investment. So in other words, the cost of Tesla building a car is there, which it shouldn't be, and the cost of what could have been made by spending that money on the side of the investment where the ROI is already over 20% is being ignored. So the costs are misaligned in accounting. But, you know, it's all we have. That therein lies the problem. To do this right is going to be a lot more like work than what we would do in a 240 class. As a matter of fact, there's almost a rebellion in 341, the class after this, that's like this when we start to look at those because they're really hard sometimes. Usually the way we look at it is we say, all right, let's look at where they spent their money, okay, and then ask ourselves, where reasonably could they have spent it instead? Now, a lot of companies are very intelligent. They're going to analyze very carefully and find the best way to spend money. But in a lot of other cases, we can say, all right, they did this capital expenditure. What else could they have done? And what would have been the return on that? What other parts of their company, what other divisions, for example, would we want to look at where they could have put this money that might have had a higher ROI on it? So, there you go. Anyway, enough of that. Now down to the numbers. And actually, this sounds like a difficult subject, but if you do it just the basic way, and quite honestly, I've done it this way myself way too many times just because I was not ambitious. It's really not a difficult exercise at all. You just have to watch yourself, your arithmetic, which is one of my weak points is my arithmetic. But I want you to tell me, give me a company, a public company, and we'll see if we can do a free cash flow for the last year. Anyone got one? What? Really? You know its trading symbol? Hang on. You said it's called Solar City?
S-C-T-Y.
Well, let's look at the basics of it. Well, that certainly is shoot the hell out of me. Solar City? Nope. Solar City is not a public company. Oh, it was. I don't know. That's like fighting. That's like having your best friend become Vladimir Putin. Okay. And don't say Tesla for God. Well, actually, you could say Tesla. No, I mean, you would see. I really am going to be so sorry I did this. Because, you see why? Because, you know, this is like, this could be actually a positive cash flow for last year. Or it could be some number that my calculator. See, the calculator goes to scientific notation when numbers are too positive or too negative. Okay,
Seriously, the beta of Tesla is 0.52? Oh, that's got to be a miscalculation. Oh, well. On we trod, SEC.gov. And filings, company filing search. By the way, this is a little hint. The weekend before the final exam, I'm going to put on ReggieNet a couple of companies by their trading symbols. It might be worth your while to check those companies to see what, you know, their betas are and their market caps. I'm not saying I would ask you that on the final exam, but I would ask you that on the final exam. So it's worth your while. I mean, it's easy. Almost hand you those points if you have the ambition to just look at the stupid screens. Because that's one of the things that actually is important in this course, in my judgment, is that you come out of here knowing how to look for yourself just the basic investment information. Let's go back to their... Okay, excuse me. We'll use the K. Actually, you can do this quarterly free cash flows, and that's fine. I'm just going to do the last, use the last annual to see what happened. And this could be brutal here. This could be brutal. Because we're going to take again, this is that thing, income statement, statement of income. Consolidated statement of operations. Ah, I found the right one. There we go. Okay, so now, you see the revenue lines, just like they're in my formula for free cash flow. See them? And then they add up the revenues to be 11.758, et cetera, billion. And then you see the statement of costs. And then, this is the growth, these are the costs that are directly related to production. So then you get down here to gross profit, which is revenue minus cost of goods sold. And now we can look down here. R&D, now the interesting thing is that when they say research and development here, that's 1.378. This is a little bit dodgy because are they saying that is the depreciation and amortization, or was that R&D that could be directly expensed? We'll have to go over to the statement of cash flows to be sure. As a matter of fact, very quickly, let me run over to the depreciation. 1.636 billion in depreciation and amortization, as opposed to this number, which is research and development, 1.3. Those are different numbers, so I'm suspecting that the 1.3, and here again, notice that this isn't exact science sometimes. I am speculating that these are probably two different things. The R&D here on the income statement is very likely something that was research and development that they were allowed to expense in the year that it happened, as opposed to capital expenditures that were depreciated otherwise and are hidden somewhere else in here. Wow. Okay, so anyway, driving it down, we get our interest income, interest expense, all of this. And then you get your income taxes. So there we are, right there. At that line, that should be the top line of the free cash flow. Negative $2.24 billion. call me a vision, a visionary, but I suspect the free cash flow is going to be negative. What is that number? 2240 578. And again, recognizing that this includes sunk costs and it does not include opportunity costs. So probably this, well, I can't speculate on that. Okay, now we go to the next slide. Now, let's add back the depreciation expense, the depreciation expense, and we get that from the statement of cash flows. Depreciation and amortization, 1636. What was 003? Notice that they utilize depreciation and amortization to really knock down their tax liabilities. You see that? Because if they hadn't used that depreciation and amortization, their free cash flow would have been a lot worse than it was. That depreciation and amortization served as a massive tax shield for them. The next one is minus capital expenditures. Now, this one will need the statement of cash flows again. You have to dig around, and I'm going to show you. And it's just one of those things. There's no known place where it's going to show up. Come on. I'm looking for operating activities. This one. Operating. Okay. Capital expenditures. Come on. Ah, here we go. Purchase of property. There it is. Right there. Like I said, these are not always easy to find. Just look, don't panic. It's there somewhere. You're looking for physical expenditures of money. Physical expenditures of money. In this case, negative 3414. So that's 3414814. Thank you. 814. Now notice that it's negative on the statement of cash flows, but you're minusing it. So don't worry about the negative. It's not minus minus. It's just minus. Okay. And finally, net working capital. NWC 0, NWC 1 period back. So then we can get the change in them. Now, going back up here to the consolidated balance sheets, we can do that. Current assets for the current year, 657520. 657520. 20, is that right? Okay, can you read me the 1 year back current assets? 6259 796. I wrote something wrong here.
It's a zero after this.
Oh, 0520. Okay, that now the current liabilities. Did I take it down far enough to? Okay, 7674 670. And what's 1 year back?
5837 00.
Okay, so net working capital. This is a lot like work. And notice how Excel, this is one of those where Excel can really make this a lot faster. You can download the Excel of their financials and do this a lot faster. 657-0520 minus 7674-670. Ooh, they had negative net working capital last year. Negative 1104150. And then one period back, they were at current liabilities. Oh, I've got it right there. 6259, 6259, 796 minus 5827. 432,791. Well, there's an interesting thing right there. Their net working capital actually turned from positive to negative from 2016 to 2017. That's not a good sign at all. Your network, now, it's not necessarily true that they should be about the same. It's not necessarily true that they should, current assets should be higher than current liabilities. But I'm a little concerned right there that they turned sour. Now, the change in net working capital would be 1105150. 1105150 less 432,791. No, that's not right. That was supposed to be a negative. 1104150 negative minus 432,791. Wow. They bled cash. They bled cash out of their net working capital. I mean, the heck. So now we have minus 1536,941. Whoa. Maybe it's just me, but okay. 2408 plus 1636,003 minus 3414,314,814 minus 1536,941.
I mean, maybe I'm going out on a limb, but I'm going to say that is really bad. They bled $5.6 billion in cash, free cash flow.
I mean, their income statement was bad enough. It said, well, that negative $2.2 billion was it? Yeah, negative $2.24 billion accounting-wise. But from a finance point of view, that didn't even nearly cover how bad it was. It was more than about 2.5 times that bad, bleeding free cash flow. And it's just like a staggering. Now, how do they make up for that? That was free cash flow. That's cash came pouring out of the company's nose and other places. So if we look at the balance sheet very quickly, you can also look at the statement of cash flows for this too. Where did all that money come from? Do you see it anywhere on there? Well, they've stopped paying a lot of their bills. No doubt about that. Very good. Look at their current liabilities. Almost $2 billion they didn't pay that they should have. That saved some money. Very good. Is there any other place where they actually got money? Anywhere? Here's a hint. No, look here first. They borrowed vast sums, close to $4 billion, $3.6 billion. That's where they got the money to keep that company running. If they hadn't done that, the company would have simply shut down. They just simply borrowed. They leveraged themselves insanely. And that's desperation. We'll look at that in just a second, because now I can bring you back around to optimal capital structure. Okay. And then you are absolutely correct. If I look at preferred stock at additional paid in capital. They had to have sold stock. You see that right there? That would be stock that they sold. That'd be the only reason that would go up. So they borrowed a shot ton of money. And they sold a huge pile of stock. Now, to the investors. Now, the new term is of. Did you ever have one of those things? You know, you take it apart and they call it a lollipop. You never had a lollipop, so you wouldn't know what we used to call. What did we used to call lollipops? Yes. Yes, that describes the investors. Wait, should we write that down? Yes! Okay, let's look at something else here. Let's look at debt and equity. I'm just going to use the numbers here. And I closed off my calculator, of course, being a fool. So let me look at something interesting right here. Let's look at their total liabilities to their total assets. Just as a rough measure, we've got 2302. Okay, let me do 1 year back. 16750, 167 divided by total assets of 22664. 076. So, previous year, liabilities to assets was 73.9%. Wow, that's hugely leveraged right there. So, in other words, the equity would be the equity to assets. Would be the 26.1%. So now let's look at just this last year. We would have for the total liabilities, 23022, 980 divided by total assets of 2865. I can't read that worth crap. 28.28. For God's sake, someone help me here.
655,372.
My eyes are so bad anymore. I look in the mirror in the morning, I think, well, not bad. 80.3. And so the equity to assets would be 19.7%. They have no idea where their optimal capital structure is. They don't care at this point. You see that those two capital structures are quite a bit different. That should not look like that year over year. You might see years flow away, but you don't see it going all over the place. This is one of those companies where they just don't care about something important like optimal capital structure. It goes to that old saying, when you're up your ass in alligators, it's hard to clear out the swamp. You know, in this case, they're in such financial trouble that they can't even worry anymore about optimal capital structure. They'll just borrow as much as they can, sell stock if there are suckers out there to buy it, to keep the company going. And all they're doing is they're borrowing money so they can pay their bills. And they're borrowing and they're financing. They have to finance. In order to pay all of their bills in a timely manner, They had to finance $5.5 billion. That, in other words, revenue was not even, what was the revenue of this company? I didn't even see the revenue. Let's try this. Let's go back up here to the one last thing. Consolidated statement. Their revenue was 11.750751. They would have needed to increase that revenue by well more than half again to have closed this gap, because they would have to have paid taxes and all that on the money. But just basically, probably more than half again that revenue, they would have had to boost to get to a zero net cash flow. Now, here's what we do from a point like this. We project out 3-5 years. We say, okay, based upon the ratios that we see of the numbers so far, we can build the finance, the income statement and the balance sheet moving forward from here, and then get the free cash flows for 5 years, and then, or 10 years, I mean, if you want, in Excel it's not going to be that hard, and then just take the present value of those free cash flows to get the current value, enterprise value of the corporation. Now, one last look. Oh, we got a nice update on the market. What's the market cap of Tesla? Do you see it? What is it?
$59.741 million.
Almost $60 billion. That's the market's assessment of the value of this corporation. That would be the dynamics of a market doing the present value of the future expected cash flows of this entity. So the market says that if you were to string these free cash flows out And they probably, in the current, the way the company is currently, you string those out, you get a really negative number. Get the net, the present value of maybe 10 years of blood flowing in this company, the way it has been performing, you get a negative enterprise value. Why is the market giving it a positive enterprise value? And this takes us clear back to the beginning of the lecture. Why is the market saying, well, Professor Kring, you're wrong. What's going on? And no, I'm not wrong, and no, the market is not wrong either. There's no such thing as the market is wrong. Yeah, that's, you know, a shark is coming to eat you. Well, you're wrong, great white shark. He'll eat you anyway. Okay, so what is going on here? You got to speculate. Give me something. Give me a bone. Anything? What perceived value? What's going on? What is the market thinking is going to happen? There are two possibilities. One is that the bloody jugular that is killing this company's free cash flow is going to turn around and suddenly huge, huge numbers of those cars are going to start selling like hotcakes. What's the other thing that the market might be thinking? There are only two possibilities here, really. What's the other thing that the market might be thinking? Or there are two other things. Why would this be positive? Why would the market say the present value of future free cash flows is positive when we see that there is no reason in the company's current behavior to believe that? What would the market be thinking then? Two possibilities. Yeah. Yahtzee. There's one. This is speculative takeover value. This is because the company's bleeding. I mean, this company would be so vulnerable. It pretty much couldn't even try to deploy poison pills. The only thing that's keeping it from being taken over is the founder has such a powerful stake in the company. But that might go not work. Any other reason that it could possibly happen? Who's the owner of this company? Elon Musk. Well, one thing, interestingly enough, did you see, was it Elon Musk who said that he's planning to move to Mars? Yeah, he said he's going to leave Earth and move to Mars. Now, there's a great thing, because then it would take a few hours for him to get communication back here. But there's another thing, too. It's possible that one of the things that is possible, the market is still, that, by the way, 60 billion market cap is not anything to write home about. That's actually a pretty piss-ass market cap. But the speculation is that either Musk is going to let go and he's going to put people in charge who are not cray-cray crazy, or on his own, he's going to finally end this nonsense with the bloody division. It's going to come to the point. Clearly, he can't keep borrowing money. The markets are not going to keep buying new issues of stock that he has shelf-registered. One way or the other, it can't keep going the way it is. Something's got to give. Either Elon Musk gets his major act together and says, enough of this, end this nonsense, or these cars take off and they suddenly start selling like hotcakes. The speculation is that Musk is going to finally, he'll have to. He can't keep doing what he's been doing. The company can't keep doing this. They are already paying $5.5 billion by borrowing money and selling stock. The markets are not going to take that anymore. The weighted average cost of capital has got to be just insane on this right now. So it's clear that it can't keep going. So whatever is going to break, the market says there's $60 billion worth of bet on the break being a good thing. The market saying, okay, Either Musk on his own will drop this nonsense, or he'll finally realize that he can't do it, and he's going to finally give up control to those who are going to say, all right, let's clean up this mess. But that's essentially the market saying, buy the stock. It's a $60 billion bet that it's going to do something good. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.